do you know how many arrows he took? And he just kept fighting.
So the takeaway is that we wish that Tasha Yar had been arrowed to death. Captain's Pod, Stardate 810524.
Woo! I know what that means now.
Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she desires peaceful coexistence, it's Ambassador Danae.
I do. But I have a question.
Yes.
When we started this podcast, every time we kind of shifted to a different season, you changed up your star chart algorithm.
Star date. Yeah.
And people were trying to guess to figure out, like, crack the code of what your star system is. And since you just said 24, so predominantly,
I
at least know part of it is the year.
The only thing that's been consistent with it, I had all of the best intentions to have a Stardate system that makes sense. However, there was at least one season where I forgot to change part of it. So unless we re-record all of those episodes and I dub in the new number, I screwed it up. But they do still make sense. The last number, the 24 before the decimal.
Oh, let me guess that one.
Could you guess?
How many colonoscopies you've had this year?
Yes, exactly. It's interesting how it's just once a year.
24 in five days.
since I was 9, I've had, that's when my first one was. It was at 9, and it's been once a year ever since.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's why we're up to 24.
That's invasive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eating an apple on the left. I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're still doing that, aren't you? Put that down.
I'm going to put it down.
I forgot that we were recording.
I apologize.
The first number, the 8, was supposed to be in line with the season number that we're in. And guess what? I messed that up in season 8 and forgot to change it for season 9. And I think season 9 was when we did Picard season 3 or Lower Decks, one of the two.
That was a long time ago, Ian.
Yeah, no, I completely forgot. Like a year ago, I forgot to change it.
Let's just change it right now.
I kind of like it now.
What, mid-season? Let's just change it mid-season.
Okay, next week I'll change it to 9. But yeah,
it needs to change to what it actually is. Go ahead and just skip forward.
No, because then I'll have to add a digit. I want it to be 5 digits. No, 6 digits and then the decimal. I don't want it to be 7 digits, or else that's too long to say. Anyway, amazing.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's so good.
We're learning so much about your idiosyncrasies. I love it.
You iceberg touched barely. Last week's episode, we did Conspiracy, which was an episode that we actually recorded 2 weeks ago. And something that I love about doing episodes in advance is that invariably Danae predicts something she couldn't have possibly known was going to happen. Now, it's been a while since we recorded, so I don't expect you to remember this, but during the intro to Conspiracy, you mentioned something about salt lick traps, either as part of your prediction or I can't remember the exact context, but you mentioned salt lick traps before knowing that the man trap would literally have salt lick traps in the episode for the salt monster. You didn't even know we were doing the man trap.
I'm telling you right now that I love the mystery of the mind. You just never know. You never know.
That was it. I did your intro, which was she wants to consume you for your salt content. That was your intro.
And but then I didn't have any context for it.
You had no context for that because we hadn't done the man trap yet. Yeah. So you mentioned a deer and like salt lick traps for a deer. And in the man trap, there are salt lick traps. It's just universe, man. How does it work? Okay. We have some emails to get to. We have officially a backlog of emails. We may have to do a mailbag episode. So please don't be disheartened. I'm trying to get through to replying to them and getting them in the show. Love you guys emailing us. It's the best. So we're going to try and get through 2 or 3 before we get into the show. With that, let's head over to the cargo bay or shuttle bay. I can't remember.
Don't forget that.
And do some emails. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, email. We have a follow-up from Arunan that I wanted to get through really quickly. It was specifically about how I pronounced his name.
Yes, let's keep this going.
The recap was Arunan sent us a lovely email. Can't remember the question because the most important part was that he gave me a pronunciation for his name, but didn't tell me which syllable to emphasize. It seems like I got it right. And here's the follow-up from Arunan. It was so fun to hear you read my message. Love the discussion that followed. Wish I could remember the discussion that followed. Sorry that I forgot to tell you which syllable of my name to accent. Do not apologize.
It's okay.
It's totally fine. What I love about this is that I still don't have an answer. So, in general, he continues, Sri Lankans accent the first syllable, Americans the second, and Japanese people generally accent the third. Take your pick. And what's best, so the last name that I attempted to reply was Konu Susapile, and he says, I never use my surname, so don't worry.
Yes.
So I tried so hard, I got so far, and in the end, it didn't
Does it really matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we're going to go with the Sri Lankan pronunciation, which is Arunan. Please continue to send me your pronunciations.
Just send us anything, really.
Yeah, anything you want.
And I want to encourage everybody once again to please send questions that are completely unrelated to Star Trek for me to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to live out my podcast dreams on your podcast.
Do it.
Ian, this is your podcast.
This is a safe space.
But I'm gonna have like my own segment that's completely unrelated to Star Trek. It's going to be great.
Ask Danae. Yeah.
It's gonna
ask
be great.
The ambassador. Yeah. Ambassador answers? AAA, ask the ambassador anything. AAA. We should call it AAA. We should call it a AAA meeting. That's what we should do.
And everybody has to have like a membership.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm
going to start my own podcast.
Photo on it.
I'm going to do it. It's
you must send your photo to us with the email.
Nope.
Of your mugshot.
No, we don't need to see your pictures.
Nope, don't need that. Don't send me your toes. So our next email that we're going to whip through is from Sean. This is in result to the Mantrap, the Salt Monster episode, and I love this point, and I want to see if you follow this logic and you agree with it. When I watched the episode, I took away that the salt... So, sorry, bit of context. We sinned it, so this is possibly a sin correction. Why didn't the Salt Monster kill McCoy when they had the chance
right.
and then carry on around the ship because
right.
they took on McCoy's body?
Right.
When Sean watched the episode, he took away that the Salt Monster had switched its affection and its like symbiosis kind of parasiticness away from Nancy's husband to McCoy because the feelings were deeper and the monster could manipulate McCoy better than Nancy's husband. And it's said that the monster even says that the memory was stronger than the husband's.
Oh.
And this is why she didn't kill McCoy, so that she could carry on using McCoy. And straight after that is when the husband gets killed.
Oh, so, interesting.
That makes so,
so
much sense.
This is not a polyamorous being.
No, this is a monogamous parasitic being that was... And it makes so much sense. That's why it didn't kill McCoy.
Okay, I love that. That's a really good point.
Sin redacted. We've turned it away.
I really feel like... The more I think about that episode, the relationship, like this creature is the most curious thing. I want to know
it's
more about this creature. Yeah.
It's the fact that they describe it as a water buffalo, but it's so intelligent. Wait, did I get it right? Was it? No, it's bison.
No.
God
no.
damn it.
You did it again.
They describe it as an Asian giraffe, and it's uh-huh. absolute, it's intelligent.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you, Sean, for that. Loved that email. That tweaked my brain. It was great. Let's go through one last one. This is from James, aka Flyboy, who appears in our Twitch chat. Again, this is another Mantrap dude, and I think you'll like this, Danae. It's specifically about watching it for the first time back when it aired.
Ooh, I love these.
And we questioned, like, because this was the first ever episode of Star Trek, was it part of like a big promotional push? What was the marketing like? And James says that he remembers it was part of NBC's ad campaign, and all three networks had them at around this time of year for the new TV season. So he knew the premiere was coming and was super excited for it. He remembered in the preview voiceover, the line, whoever was doing the voiceover said, like, imagine piloting a spaceship the size of a floating city, and that's when the Enterprise would fly by on screen.
Oh.
So James remembers being hyped for this new Star Trek show, this new show in space on a flying city, and then the Mantrap happened, and he remembered enjoying it. It was enough to keep him engaged with the show. How cool is that? That's from the 60s.
I love, what a cool memory. Share your memories with us, too. It doesn't even have to be about the episodes we're talking about. If you have episodes of when you watched the show mm-hmm. or what it was like, especially if it came out when you were watching TV. Oh man, yeah. I want to hear your stories because,
yeah,
for me watching it when I was young, there was, you know, He-Man and She-Ra and Batman, mm-hmm, Return. Like Batman was on like my, yeah, cartoons Batman, that I watched. Animated series? Yeah, the animated series. So, you know, I was watching TNG at that point. And being imaginative was just part of what my media consumption was like, you know? Yeah. So I'm really curious what watching television was like then. I'm starting, yeah, to read books with my daughter where I'm wanting her to develop being, mm-hmm, able to see things in her imagination rather than having to see them on a screen. But I imagine like back then it must have been lots and lots of book reading and newspaper reading and a lot of reading. And then TV was like a treat.
Yeah, because it was on at a dedicated time. It's like Star Trek's on, everybody hush.
Because that's watch it. TV. You watch, yeah, it then. You don't get to record it.
Nope. Got to wait for those reruns, which who knows when they're going to come up.
Yep.
Cool. Love those emails. Thank you for sending those in. Email us captainspod@cinemasins.com, on X at captainspodcs on the Discord, cinemasins, discord.gg/cinemasins. You guys are the best. Okay, Danae, this week we are continuing the Monster Medley into 2024. Happy New Year. We're continuing in TNG now that we finished with the exploding scorpion bugs and vaporizing people's faces, because that's what Star Trek does now. And not my Star Trek. And we're going into Skin of Evil.
Skin of Evil.
Now, full disclosure, we have some lovely graphics if you join us in the live show that pop up on screen. And I left one on screen accidentally. So the ambassador does know that this is a Tasha episode because I had a picture of Tasha on screen. And I usually put the big plot stuff up on screen. So you know this is a Tasha episode. What is your prediction for what happens? Let's have a general one and an oddly specific Worf-based drinking tea prediction. Pull it out of the ether. Pull that salt lick out of the air.
It's weird. Wait, what? We're still on the monsters, right?
Mm-hmm. Monster medley, yeah.
Okay, monster medley.
Still picking out weird monster, creature, alien things.
Okay. I think that this monster is going to be a morphing monster. One that can assume the visage of someone else. Kind of like last monster in a way.
Uh-huh. Is that like kind of tying into the skin?
Yeah,
thing?
I'm thinking that they're like taking on the skin.
Yeah.
If not, we're talking about lesions, people. And I just don't want to watch an episode with lesions, so I'm hoping it's not.
Okay, we're going to be pivoting gear into a completely different episode of Star Trek.
Oh, great. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Wait, I typed that as liaisons. That's completely different. It turns out I don't know how to spell lesions. Okay. Okay, oddly specific.
Oddly specific will be somebody kisses someone that they don't know is not really the person that they but I think I'm thinking about the love episodes that we're going to have coming up.
So ready for Valentine's.
You can still send in your submission for that,
yeah,
by the way, because we're collecting, mm-hmm, episodes that you are sending us. And the idea is that it's not just love stories, it's unique love.
Mm-hmm. We've had some great suggestions already and some not so great suggestions already.
Oh dear.
Okay, love that. Let's get straight into the episode. We'll see you guys in 10 forward for a full debrief. 2 to beam out. We're back to the regular transporter.
Thank
now.
Thank God. That the other TNG one, it lasted so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
So long, you know. It was like
it
dial
was such
up.
A long transition.
It's like dial up for transport. I like how we're like, we have no time to transport now, but this is what would have worked while the transporter was going. Like, we should have had this long of a discussion during the transporter, yes, for last time, and now there's no
correct
time.
Correct. Yeah, but you can't talk while transporting. That shouldn't
you can't
happen.
You can't.
No. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice, Danae?
Are you calling me a thing? Fuck you, I'm a bean, bish.
Does this mean that I am not alive,
I am alive.
Man?
Yeah, I think maybe some... I mean, I really don't need to consume it, but maybe it would be good for my vehicle. Yeah, I'll just go with, like, car oil.
Car oil. You just straight up car oil.
Tar. Just tar. Some tar. Some Tasha Yar tar. I would like Tasha Yar tar.
Oh, you're going to have some Tasha tar?
Some Tasha tar. That's
some
it.
Yasha tar?
Mm-hmm. Some, mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to have some Metamucil, approximately 100 gallons of it combined with black printer ink, which is what I learned Armus is today. He is Metamucil, which is a thing I'd never heard of, but it's a powdered, like, supplement thing.
Yeah.
And they just got 100 gallons of it.
I'm sorry. Did you say black printer ink as well?
And black printer ink, William Frakes, literally covered in black printer ink.
Was he stained?
I mean, not now. He's fine.
Oh, man.
But yeah.
I was so bothered by that scene, and we'll get to it here.
Yeah, we will.
We'll get to it here in a minute. But, like, I wondered what it was, and I actually did a quick Google search to figure out what the goop was.
Something's got me. Oh, man.
Because that was in his eye. That was in his mouth.
Yeah. On his lips.
It was in there.
Like, they used a prosthetic for the, like, coming up from the water thing, but he was in that ink, that line, just something's got me.
Ugh.
So good. So
disturbing.
Good.
Disturbing.
Well, before we get into the specifics, Ambassador, general thoughts and feeling. No, give us a synopsis.
Okay, listen. The only thing that you need to know about this episode is that you absolutely, under no circumstances, should ever go to Vagrus 2. Okay? Just don't do it.
Don't go to Vagra 2.
And that Vagrus? Vagra?
Vagra.
Vagra.
Don't worry, I or just Vagrus. Called Jonathan Frakes William Frakes.
Did so you?
We're all, yeah, I just said William Frakes. I meant Jonathan Frakes. You know I know that. We're doing a lot, okay? It's a live show. Jonathan Riker, let's go.
In this episode, Goop is a bully and the writers are working out their angst regarding bullying.
Mm.
And so in today's episode, the TNG writers really delve into what it means to write as if you are an evil person. And also just have some really interesting back and forth commentary as Tasha dies, because spoiler alert, though not spoilery at all, Tasha dies, and they actually pretty much go back and forth with having their monster of the week say, this death doesn't matter. And I can't imagine being in the writer room going, yeah, this doesn't matter to us. We're just going to kill this character. And they just fucking say it out loud.
Not the last time they say it out loud either. They say it in another episode.
Really?
That it's just, they refer back to it. It's just, it was a meaningless death.
Yeah. I mean,
like, God damn, you're just going to straight up acknowledge that shit.
Well, the monster straight up says it.
Yeah.
Here it is. Exactly, no meaning. I did it because I wanted to and it amused me.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Super brutal.
I mean, there wasn't a fly around that I could swat, so I swatted you instead. Have fun being dead now.
Yeah. There's a lot more to talk about this episode, but I think the big takeaways from this one is that the monster is this creepy, goopy creature that is the uck of existence, of morality. I don't know how to describe it, but it definitely gets its kicks out of hurting people, and we get to watch it bully our beloveds and kill someone, and then we end in Tasha giving her own eulogy, the end.
The end. That's it. Overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador. Did you like the episode? Did you not? Gut instinct.
Yeah, I think this is a really serious episode. So if you're going to recommend this one to anybody to watch, it's because you want to have you know them well enough that this is a topic that they would want to expose themselves to. Because the deeper themes of this one is encountering somebody who really enjoys watching you suffer and actively abuses you and gaslights you for their own amusement. That is this creature.
Yeah.
So
it's the embodiment of evil and manipulation and just, as Data would say, no redeeming qualities at all.
Yeah.
What
he was like, we need to destroy
down.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Data ran all of the analysis on this and has arrived at the conclusion that death is the best option for that creature.
When the objective android is just like, you are a sadistic piece of shit. You have no redeeming features. You should be destroyed.
So there's that's a big theme for this. There's also the theme of loss of a character. So that's kind of a separate thing. If it's someone that's new to Star Trek and they don't know these characters,
absolutely not.
It might feel a bit meaningless.
Tasha. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I, like, my TNG, I didn't really spend a lot of time with Tasha. I was a full-on Worf girl. So when I started watching TNG, Worf was already in this position, and it was on the reruns that I would catch. And I don't even know if I was watching all reruns. I can't even remember. I don't know what to tell you. I just remember I got home from school and it was on TV. Yeah. So the theme of the monster this week is interesting. Like, from a monster perspective, I'm fascinated. Mm-hmm. So this is a heavier episode. This is an episode that really is talking about, like, a serious creature and a serious death. And then to solve it, they have to gaslight the creature and engage engage it in conversation to upset it so that they can beam away. They're really in a situation that's like someone does die, and more people could die, and they just happen to clever their way out of it, and they leave it on the planet for someone else to run into potentially later on. So it's kind of dark, and it's not that it's bad, it's just more serious. So I think, like, on pip wise I would give this like a 2.5 or 3 maybe.
Oh, straight into pips, like two and a half, three pips.
Yeah, because I feel like it really leans heavily on how mean the creature is, and I kind of didn't need to see that a lot. I wish that they would have maybe been more creative with the creature, or even found a way to, you know, do something with it other than it just torment. Because this is an episode where you spend the entire time on the planet being tormented. There's not really a lot of places that we go. We have a shuttle. Mm-hmm. We have the goop kind of area where the creature is hanging out. And then we have the bridge. We see sick bay. And we do see the warp core a little bit too. But there's not really a lot. Like, most of the conversation is happening, you know, on the planet. And we don't move around a bunch. So we spend a lot of time dealing with the complexity of this creature. And I think they leaned really heavily into watching it torture people. Rather than what I'm curious about, which is that this is a creature that was excreted from another being when that being shed this part it didn't want anymore. An entire society. Cool is that?
So that's why, for me personally, I like Armus as a bad guy. And I think the thing that bugged you is the thing you're not a super fan of, I kind of think the episode gets away with, because it's deliberate. Like, it is all the, like, there's this species that was just destroying itself, and they found a way to shed all of this evil and all of this negativity, which I think we need, by the way, and put it into one creature, and then they just fucked off and left. And for me, I'm like, that kind of gives it some grace, which is a weird description for Armus, to be evil. And how it says, like, I don't serve evil, I am evil, I am all of those things. And it kind of gives it permission to be this one-note character, because it's made of one thing. It's made of one set of dark emotions. And
I want to know more about that process. Oh, like,
both. Yeah, I want to know that.
Quick little comment in... this creature's name is Armus?
Armus, yeah.
When they say it, it's sort of jumbled in with all of this other confusion about what the creature is. It's sort of just beginning to explain itself in a way. And so I'm listening for a lot of information, and that kind of got lost a little bit, especially some of the voice delivery too. It's a very, like, rough and gravel voice. Guttural,
yes.
Oh, did you want me to save you? No. Would you like this cookie? And then they eat it in front of you, like, that kind of shit.
Yes.
So I got really distracted by that.
It's a child.
By the time I figured out that this is a whole thing, I wanted to go back. And what do you mean entire stuff? Like, what do you mean these super beings? I think he said something like Titans or something. I'm like, well, what about those? Like, let's go find those people and be like, you need to go back and get your mess, guys.
Look what you did. You killed one of our people.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
Yeah, exactly. Look what you did, you little jerks. That's amazing. I get it. It is a little bit one note, but what that does lead to for me that I really like is we immediately know that phasers aren't going to work, and they're going to have to talk their way out of it. This thing is super powerful. It has the convenient plot powers of disabling communications and transporters, anything with energy at will, and can disable will as well at will. And so they have to find something that isn't brute force to get around it. So enter Picard. And this has got some great Picard season one moments of it. Like, he doesn't get to do as much as he does later on. But I love in particular the change of tact when he gets down there, because Riker's been very aggressive, Tasha was aggressive, even Beverly is like, fuck you, we need to get to our people, why are you such a dick? And Picard,
I missed that line, but I love that line. That's gonna be my quote. You
essentially
dick.
What, I'm gonna help my people, you dick. Crusher, this is TV, you can't say that.
Yeah.
But when Picard gets down there, he is like a school principal, very calm, just like he's sitting Armus on the naughty step, and Armus is like, entertain me, and Picard just goes, mm-mm.
He
disarms Armus so well. Yeah,
the writers were dealing with bullying in children, like they were really struggling with how to talk to children.
Parents wrote this episode.
Yeah. I think the back and forth, if I was going to have like a deep discussion with a friend after watching this episode, and it's not just like, hey, let's just watch this episode and not talk about it. If I was going to have a discussion about it, the other thing that really stood out to me is what you're talking about. How to diffuse somebody who gaslights. How do you not engage them and give them what fuels
Don't
them
engage. Yeah.
While protecting yourself and while protecting the people that you're responsible for? And that was really interesting because they all kind of had to be really, you know, muted. But it's not easy to watch. Something where, like,
it's so frustrating.
We were talking about my little one during the pre-show on our live show, and she's 6.5 and she's going to school, and of course that's when you really learn about like your social interactions and people saying things that aren't true or even saying things to hurt you and all this stuff. I feel like if my child were to watch this, it would be really hard because it's such an unfair thing, but it's a really good example about if you don't do what they say, it diffuses the situation.
And if you don't match their energy as well.
Because if you get really mad, then you're giving them what they want. However, this episode is far too complex for a 6.5-year-old because of the element of, like, there's so much going on. There's people's lives at risk. There's a creature trying to figure out if you should honor their life and try to negotiate. Mm. There's all these like complexities, and each person, like you said, is kind of trying their way at it. And one of my favorite people to interact is actually Worf after Tasha dies and he takes over command. There's a moment when they're all going back down to the planet and they're like, come on, buddy, it's time to go kick some ass. And he, the warrior of all warriors, decides to tactically stay behind because he knows that it's not in the interest of this creature. Like, he immediately evaluates the situation. And that switch of Worf going from passive to power was really, really really beautiful for me. It's one of my favorite scenes is this explosion of emotion about Tasha passing away, Picard finger tapping the table to get everyone's attention.
I love that. I love that so much.
Tap, tap.
Tap, tap, tap.
Okay,
hello,
everybody. And
calm
then
your shit down.
Worf having an opportunity to show what he's capable of, and everyone knows he can kick ass, but this is him showing that he's also tactical in mind. And I love that. Yeah, that was so fucking
and
good.
And him just like taking the lead with Wesley and doing the technical side of programming the transporters to get them back up when the time was right. Just him stepping into a new role. And it's one of the things that season one and two does. Probably Worf gets the best character arc of anybody in season one and season two, of just him progressing from background character promoted to regular.
Yeah.
They handle that really, really well. He's one of the most interesting people in the early seasons, probably throughout the whole show.
It's also interesting, you know, knowing this episode is the one where they're killing a character, they're killing Tasha.
Yes.
To have Worf and Tasha have that exchange at the beginning of the episode.
The martial arts.
Because there's going to be this, you know, not a battle, but like a, what do they call it? A tournament.
Oh, it's a tournament, yeah.
And Tasha says, hey, let's go practice because I know if I can get this certain move down, like you know, then I'm a sure win. And Worf says, you're a sure win anyway. Everyone's betting on you. And she was just so. It meant a lot that Worf, of all people, believed in her abilities. And so it was a passing of the torch, you know, in that way where they didn't get to have some sort of exchange. I mean, they do at the very end of this episode have Tasha talk to everybody and kind of, give her peace to each of her crewmates. But yeah,
Denise Crosby has one of the most unique, soothing voices I've ever heard. Like, one of my big, like, what's the word for it? Disappointments is not seeing her in the show more. Like, the way she talks to Worf, the way she delivers stuff at the end of the episode, the slips of Tasha that we do get, I just love the way she communicates and the way, like,
Tasha?
The writers are doing, yeah, Tasha, the writers are doing a great job, but the way Denise Crosby delivers those lines, always, I kind of stop and I listen to every word she's saying. She has such a interesting cadence to her voice.
Yeah, I really like that too. And I know that the behind the scenes there's information about her being written out, things like that, which I'm curious about. We've talked about it before. We'll get to that, I'm sure. But
yeah,
as far as the episode goes, I thought that was a really good thing. And you also have the Doctor doing everything that they can do to bring her back, and it fails. I honestly thought, because I didn't know if you were showing me her death episode or not. I saw her picture, but I didn't know if this was that episode.
Yeah.
And when she was hit by the creature who sent out this shockwave or something, this really powerful, it was telekinetic or something. When that happened and she was knocked out and essentially like insta-killed, I didn't know if that was the death or if it was going to be a different episode. Because I remember someone saying, maybe it was you, like the joke is that she just like hits her head and falls over or something like this.
It
was,
basically, yeah.
Yeah, and this wasn't that. This wasn't her hitting her head and falling over. This was a battle with a creature, although it was not one where she got to go toe-to-toe. She still...
No, she just gets swatted away.
Yeah, she was swatted off by this very, very dangerous creature. But there's a moment when Beverly is attempting to save her, and the makeup for the wound looked like like a Nickelodeon
splat
goop splat,
yeah,
but in red.
Yeah,
and I thought, ooh, the creature has invaded her and it's gonna take her over.
Interesting.
It didn't go that way, obviously.
Oh,
but
way more interesting than what actually happens. And which is just, it's a weird bit of, I've never had an explanation for this. It just looks weird. Like, it's not bruising, it's not a cut, it's just a blotch. And I just assumed it was like a scar from, you know, like Harry Potter has the lightning.
Yeah.
That's what I interpret it as. It's just a scar from Armis's energy transfer.
That's what I thought. Because it was so gloopy looking.
It's so weird. It's just a splodge. So I don't think it's meant to be blood necessarily,
no,
more than just a scar from the transfer of energy.
Yeah. Because they do say that it sucked the life out of her.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this is, we had the salt sucker, you know. And it left suction cup marks. So this creature leaves a Nickelodeon splat mark. And that's just the way that is.
Yeah.
But Beverly does everything to save her. And so we kind of have that exchange. Troy has a reaction to both knowing that somebody, that she has been hurt, but not knowing that if she lived or died, because apparently her range is limited to know the truth there. So, but we do get to see Troy have a very emotional reaction at the eulogy.
Well, that was my next question, was how do you feel about Deanna in this episode? Because for me, I'm like, we're actually fucking using her.
I loved it.
We're using her powers. Like, it might be the only episode where she's used as a Beta Zed.
Yeah, well, and if that's true, then poo-poo on the show, but maybe also for the audience, perhaps seeing a character like Troy is difficult because it's a lot of just her emoting and feeling. And I think we're still in an era where seeing women in the lead is great, but having them like be emotional, maybe they were just trying to kind of limit that. I don't know. I don't want to make assumptions about what the, you know, what they were attempting here.
Honestly, I think it was just annoying at the time. Like, I think it was just too difficult to write around it, so they often ignored it. But
well,
this is integral to the plot for once.
There's a stigma that women are too emotional and men don't feel anything. And I think in media, we see the extremes of that example to us as sort of a demarcation of where we are. Like, and I think that that's blending out as time goes on. And I really like it because you can find so many different shows that have great examples of women who are emotional and strong, who are leading and still feeling the emotions that that are there, but then also men feeling emotions too, and then handling it differently. We talk so much more about mental health and working through things. And I think Deanna is an example of a character who is like a counselor person who's talking through emotions. And that probably wasn't very popular to be like, oh yeah, this is a really fascinating topic. Let's get into the psychology of this really fucked up bully that's killing people. You know, they don't want to, you know, maybe you wouldn't want to see that on TV. And so we're going to have very little of it, and then we're going to have more action and fun, and just kind of know that this is a character trait of this person. I personally love Deanna, and I had written in my notes that this is one of my, like, I don't know other episodes where she's really on display like this, but I loved seeing her like this.
I absolutely love it. Like, yes, there is the whole they have to rescue her, but she's playing like an integral role while she's there. Like, when Picard finally gets to see her, she's managed to communicate with Armus, get those little bits of information out of them, mm-hmm. about their species and why they're there, and their triggers as well. I keep saying him because it has a male voice, yeah. But they kind of just say it throughout the episode. So when Picard finally gets to talk to Deanna, she has information to communicate, and then combine that with the energy signatures, they know how to get out of it. So she's doing work while she's in there. She doesn't give up, and she's trying to reason with it. I wish they'd done that more with her, because she should be at the forefront of a lot of these conversations. She doesn't have to admit that she's like, I'm reading your mind, but she should be using that a lot more. Yeah, because that's gonna, people shut down when you can read their thoughts, funnily enough.
I feel like, I mean, one of my notes was, we have a damsel in distress situation, and it's popped up, yeah, in chat too, and that was something that was evident to me. She is very conveniently trapped, and
yeah,
that and that has that vibe to it, you know, where she can't get out on her own. And I have it as a sin, because I'm confused about why she was so limited in her capacity. But at the same time, I'm okay with her needing to have this back and forth. I wish she had been the one to best the monster, to be honest with you, because I feel like she would be in a better position than having it be Picard. I know the show needs Picard to be the captain and be the one with the power and the authority.
Have that big shouty speech.
Yeah, and it's a total Picard speech as well. And it's something that he's...
Yeah, it really
is. As the show continues on, that is an absolute staple of TNG. Mm-hmm. However, Deanna is the one that's doing all this deep work with this creature. And but maybe they didn't want to get into the abuse, because it's just this borderline abuse thing. Like, he is abusing her, you know, he's keeping her from getting care. He is literally shielding over her, looming over her in this shuttle. And the imagery is, it's deep, it's dark. This is a dark episode. So Deanna is in this deep, dark mental space, being tormented by this being that wants to torment others, attempting to find her way through that. And I don't know that she could have done it. I think eventually it would have just killed her, because it doesn't care. You know, this is a careless creature. This isn't somebody that's redeemable.
I think
the show is saying.
Yeah, I kind of like that there's a combination of Picard and Deanna, because Picard has got like the facts and Deanna has the emotion, and it's that combination that distracts Armus to like drop his guard down. Mm-hmm. So in terms of like the bullying and stuff, one of the parts of the episode that really hits me is when he bullies Geordi. Ugh. Oh, that, I mean, how did that scene hit you? Because that's a rough watch.
I think sometimes shows need to really drive a point home about the irredeemable aspect of a character, because we as an audience tend to want to stay on the spectrum of we're all for it or we're all against it. You know, being in the middle is not a comfortable place for people to be, and having unanswered questions is not comfortable. And so I think psychologically shows and writers want to make some things very apparent. And maybe at this point in the episode is when they really want the audience to know that this is not a character, this is not a creature, this is not a thing that we're wanting to bring forward or redeem. This is
it's
evil.
It's just a piece of shit.
When we say skin of evil, we're not saying skin of mostly evil, but after a good counseling session with Troy, they're okay now.
They have some, we will let you go. I've decided that we like you. You've taught me the meaning of love. This is just, now I'm going to fuck with Geordi. But it's like Data's almost visceral reaction to it. Like, I'm going to help my friend. And then giving him the verbal instructions and then deciding, no, I can't engage with this. You're just going to keep fucking with him. And just LaForge's like frustration with it as well, to be picked on in that way, like having his deepest weakness exposed, is just, it's rough.
That was difficult. I was a little disappointed that the episode didn't use, because LaForge went down just to kind of take a quick peek around and see if his visors would sense anything that, you know, that their equipment didn't do.
Yeah.
And then it turns into this example of how evil Armus is.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch, but again, to watch how these characters are being written to react to Armus was really interesting. They are trying not to play this creature's game while also holding back their desire to care for someone because there's danger. Like when it takes Riker, for example, it says if you try to help him, I'll kill him. So by not helping, Riker has a chance of staying alive by not beaming away. So Armus is trying to figure out all these ways to psychologically torture these people. And the Geordi one was an interesting one because Data was able to just, like, through logical process, not emotional process, engage this creature in a back and forth chess, which is what Picard ends up doing. And it's what, you know, kind of Deanna does to a certain degree. They're really just trying to figure out where they can kind of get their footing in. But of course, I hated that part. And it was one of the most evident, this is a bully. And then the next kind of example of that is when it forces Data to potentially kill one of his mates.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it does take Riker. We have that really creepy scene of his mouth gaping open. And that was just disturbing. Oh, my God.
According to Jonathan Frakes himself in an interview, I think it was a couple of years ago, he says it was him because nobody else would do it. He was the only one that was willing to go into this 100-gallon pool of shit just covered in it. Now I'm pretty sure that's a prosthetic, because the way the mouth fills up, the way the mouth fills up is like all, like, it's clearly got an empty side, but he is covered in this shit when he emerges from it.
He is pooped out.
And I read a little bit about this, what's interesting is that this, like, printer ink, which is just baffling to me that they use printer ink, the printer ink and this Metamucil stuff would dissolve the costume of the person underneath it. So it was a man.
I'm sorry, it was caustic enough to...
The man's name is...
standing up in the goop, okay.
Yeah, Mart McChesney was in a suit. And then they piled this ink and stuff on top of it, but it would dissolve the suit underneath, so they had to keep replacing it because it's just this hideous, hideous caustic stuff. I'm like, this would never happen today.
No, it wouldn't happen. No. Oh my God.
But I love it. This creature design, I love it. Like, it's just this tarry, and it does just look like a skin of evil. It just is. It's exactly like what I imagine when I picture that.
Oh,
it's,
man,
so gross.
What a day filming that would be,
right? And he's just like the only one that's willing to go in there. Like, Geordi's like, no. LeVar Burton's like, nope, not doing it. Gates McFadden's like, nope, not doing it.
No.
Will's just like, yeah. Jonathan's just like, yeah, I'll do it. It's fine, I'll get in there.
I'm sure he wasn't quite so excited. I mean, maybe I don't know. I guess there are times when you're filming something and you just, you know, this is going to be epic. I just wish it wasn't so caustic that it was dissolving people's clothing. That's that's disturbing.
Yeah. We don't. Yeah, that's probably not something we need to put people through, to be completely honest.
No. But that was a really alarming visual too, and I think there can be. I mean, you can kind of see meaning in anything that you want, but this idea that you're covered in this goop that like you can't get out of. Because Riker has people that care for him, they collect him, they scoop him off. And that's really true to life, right? Like when you have a community, whether it's in person or online, when you have people that care for you and are curious about you and check in with you, it feels like you're just getting kind of goop scraped off sometimes, and it makes the harder stuff easier. And the idea is that this creature is not only the leftover remnants of everything dark, but also utterly alone. And whatever redeeming qualities could be there to have someone want to stay and care for, it would just kill them. So
yeah,
I think the idea here is that the show is playing with the idea of what a pure evil creature would look like. And this particular one kills Tasha. And that is a much more interesting death than just falling over.
I agree. Well, before we get into that bit again, with the Riker moment, we've already had Tasha die. So I wonder if at the time, I can never know because I didn't watch it the first time round. I don't fully remember when I first watched this episode, but I wonder if people actually thought, could we lose Riker as well? Like, could this be multiple cast members dying? So I'd be interested if anybody at home can remember this, and whether you thought, nah, they've killed Tasha, so Riker's not really in trouble. Or were you thinking, man, are we going to lose Riker too? Like, is he dead? Because the stakes are different. When you know somebody is dead, the stakes are suddenly like, oh, they can kill people off.
Yeah. I mean, they're very brave to do it, to take a character and remove it from rotation.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you be willing, you know, to do that with anybody, especially since Tasha was the head, chief of security. So,
yeah,
you know, here is the second in command. Yeah, I do wonder. I wonder if people thought that maybe there would be multiple, you know, characters to kind of go out at this point in time.
Really fascinating.
It really is fascinating. And we haven't even talked about the characters that are in this episode that I don't know what the fuck they are. Ben? Who the fuck is Ben?
This don't
chief,
worry.
This chief
Pilot
guy.
Ben. You'll never see Pilot Ben again. Don't worry.
This chief of engineering who's working with some crystals.
You mean Leland T. What's it? Lynch? Yeah. Leland T. Lynch?
Yes. Who gives his full name.
It's so weird. Every
yes,
time.
Captain. Leland T. Lynch reporting from the third corridor of the.
You know what it reminds me of? It's like this guy wants a promotion. He's like, I am Lieutenant Commander. Could be Commander. Leland T, that's with a T, Lynch. That's L-Y-N-C-H. Like, don't forget my name. And it's just, he does it twice. It's like, there's Leland T. Lynch again. It's like, we get it. Unless that's all of his name. Like, his surname is actually Leland T. Lynch.
I just wonder who this person is behind the scenes that he has this character that gets to have this much of a name reference. Like, it was just...
Uh-huh.
Was very much standing out to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a Lynch that is mentioned again, but I believe that's an Ensign Lynch, and he's mentioned in one of the Star Trek movies. So unless Leland T. Lynch has had several demotions in the next 15 years, it's not the same guy. But yeah, just interesting how much he gets named. And he's like the fourth or fifth chief engineer that we've had during season one. So I think one of them dies, one of them did all of the fan emails that then got fired, and then the other one was a lady that we never see again.
Oh, wow.
So while we're back into the death throes of this episode, it's pretty well documented why Denise Crosby left the show. She said herself she wasn't enjoying what the show was giving her. Like, she was really disappointed that her character wasn't getting enough development, wasn't getting like kind of any big episodes, wasn't getting kind of like the stuff that she wanted to do. And she was really worried about being typecast and being just the person at the security station saying, yes, Captain, for the next 6 years, and just dressing up like that every day and just being, because when you get into sci-fi, especially in like the 80s and 90s, you're kind of like pigeonholed into that. I think it is different today. People break out a lot differently. Like David Tennant and Matt Smith have gone on to do very different things. After Doctor Who, they're not typecast. But back in the day, it was like, oh, you're Tasha Yar. And she wanted to get out of that while she could. And yeah, she says she has no regrets. I mean, that's who knows whether that's true or not. But she said it was the right decision for her at the time. And that's all you can know. It wasn't being particularly well received. I don't know if they would have, I don't think she would have known that at the time, but I'm sure after season one came out, she was probably like, oh, I've made the right choice, because it wasn't very well received and it almost didn't get a third season. Okay. So, yeah, and so she went to Gene Roddenberry and said, can I get out of this somehow? And he agreed and killed her off in what a lot of people believe is an unceremonious death, but I don't think it's meaningless, and that's what I really want to dive into. Do you think it's a meaningless death?
I think that this episode is the writers struggling with that very question. I don't think I have an answer to that. I believe that their struggle to, we have been instructed to kill this character and it feels meaningless, giving it to a monster that also doesn't care and finds it meaningless is a really interesting thing. I want to believe that it's on purpose, not as an insult to the actor who is bringing this character to life, but maybe just as a content creator who is working hard at making these imaginary people interact and come to life and do something compelling episode to episode, week to week. Maybe the pressure of this character was a relief for them. Maybe it was a struggle for them. Maybe they had ideas, you know, and we know that it's not always the same, you know, writers, but at the same time, like, there's people that are very dedicated to, even in season one, to the craft of this type of storytelling. So I don't know that I have an answer for it. Because I don't have a lot of emotional connection to Tasha and I wasn't watching this season, you know, week to week, you know, really getting invested or anything. I can't say from personal experience that it was like meaningless. I would say that this episode is touching on that question of like, what are we doing here?
And for me, I struggle to call it meaningless because what I like about it is that it's random and that it's in the line of duty. Like, there's it's kind of disrespectful from my point of view to, let's say, so you're in the basically Starfleet, like we said, is a space navy. It's a quasi-military organization. They have the weapons, all of that. Yes, they're on a mission of exploration, but they're also on missions of defense as well. So why are you devaluing someone's sacrifice based on how they died? So she got up in the morning, went to work, she went down to the planet on a rescue mission and died during the course of that rescue mission. For me, that's pretty honorable. Like, she's doing her duty. She made a calculated move to risk herself to get to Deanna, who at that point they don't know if she's dead or alive, in need of help, whatever. She's like, I'll take this risk and I'm gonna go, and then get shot down because of it. And I'm just like, I just it's not just a demonstration of his power, it's that she risked her life to rescue one of her crewmates. So I always struggle when people say it's meaningless, because I'm like, she's doing her job. Like, however that happened, okay, she died in a transporter accident. It was doing her job as well.
All get Boromir's death, okay?
Right?
One of the most...
Boromir didn't deserve that death, the stinking little traitor, ring-stealing bastard.
Listen. Sorry, that's one of the most Boromir. Amazing deaths ever written, in
just
my opinion.
Just because it took a long time doesn't make it amazing.
It's not that it took a long time.
No, I know.
It's
I'm
not.
Basing it on the movie.
Do you know how many arrows he took? And he just kept fighting.
So the takeaway is that we wish that Tasha Yar had been arrowed to death. Awesome.
But that is the question, is what does an honorable death mean, you know, to you? And her expression at the end is, I hope I died with my eyes wide open. And I think what that means is, I hope I died knowing that my actions were actions of my own choosing. And they were.
Yeah.
And she died the death maybe she hoped to die, which was in service and in servitude to her friends. I think what the audience wants is her defending them and dying to protect them, which she is in a way.
She was!
Kind of, but like, we know Deanna's in there with her ankle underneath a barbed wire and can't get up for some reason. Like, we know that.
And a PC monitor from 1987.
But she doesn't know that. So she is defending Deanna and Ben. She is. She's attempting to get to them. But it's just in that traditional, right? It's not in that traditional sense of a warrior's death, like I think we think. Like, a warrior's death usually has a little bit more, it's more on the nose. And this one is almost like a toss away. Even in the action, even in the arm
gesture. It's literally discarding.
He's just literally like swinging his arm as if he's doing some sort of a spell cast, and then it's done. Yeah.
Like, even if the writers were throwing some shade, literally, and were doing this as a, we're going to give you the shittest death possible, I don't know that that death exists when she's on an away mission and doing her duty. So regardless of what the writers were trying to do, or maybe they weren't trying to do that, I'm still just like, she died. Like, sometimes it happens, not in the big Klingon way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just happens.
I like this comment from chat so much, so I'm gonna pop it in right now. Flyboy says, it's like discounting a firefighter's death who charged into a building and had a wall collapse on them before they could reach the victim. And that's exactly it. We wouldn't ever disqualify or discount that person from doing an act of service. It's not the battle that I think maybe people who love this character would have wanted. They would have wanted her to go out in a different way. But it's not a terrible, it's interesting to think about, though.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm glad I finally had the opportunity to vent about that and put my thoughts on record about Tasha's death.
I do want to say this episode ends with, you know, Picard going in like to like this mental back and forth battle where he essentially tricks this creature into getting so angry that its energy field drops low enough that they can transport out. And that's the whole purpose of Picard going down, is he knows he can kind of best him mentally. At least he thinks he can, and he does. And then they're back on the ship and they fire on the planet. Boo. And I legit thought that they were going to just take out the planet.
Yes, we're going to detonate the atmosphere. We're going to murder this thing. Because that we have destroyed the shuttlecraft comes a good amount of time after the torpedo is seen. So that, oh, that's what you're doing. It's like, we've decided to spend the next hour pummeling Armus with torpedoes. Like, survive this, dickhead. But no, that's not what it is. So how did you feel about the memorial service at the end? Did it hit you? Did you like the delivery? Did you like how that went?
I didn't really. I mean, it...
Interesting.
It was me kind of going, okay, this is what you need to do for this character. This is the proper kind of send-off where you have an audience that needs to have resolution, and what a way to be able to do it in a future... Well, we have this now. I could... face to camera, say my goodbyes to many people and leave them a message that if I were to die, that they would be able to have a personal message to me. However, I would like to think that I've already had those beautiful conversations and they know how I feel. But in this case, it felt forced because, and this is one of my big sins, she's very specific to the people that are there, and she's very specific. Mm-hmm. In fact, she specifically says, Wesley, sorry couldn't see you grow up, buddy. How did she know that she was gonna die before he grows up?
I have a retort. I have a rebuttal to that. I don't necessarily think that everybody has one of these, but I can buy that Tasha does, because her job as security chief is extra risky on paper, and she's going to be on the front line more often. She's also lived with death a lot longer based on like her upbringing and the planet that she was found on. And I can imagine that she updates this every now and again.
Every away mission? Because this was...
Not every away mission,
okay,
no.
I've got to go to this
what
dangerous thing.
What was so
thing?
Specific
Hold
to
on,
this away
before
mission?
Before I beam down, let me just go make the most poignant speech of my life.
How do you know when she did it?
How do we know when she did it?
There is nothing specific to this away mission or that she did it.
No, I'm just saying, like, how would you know? Is it just, you know, once
you
a
don't
month?
Know. She just updates it. Like, she would only have to do like once every 6 months
ass.
Or once a year. But
can
what
you
can
imagine?
Do is that this is a hologram and you can just enter like, okay.
Iris, I love you. I've been doing this every week in case I die this week. I just want you to know I love you. It means something. It matters. You know, please go back
sure,
to the 15
like that,
other videos that I've made about how much I love you.
No, you just
and,
rewrite
and
them.
And the genuineness that I felt the first time I wrote this message will be there. But now that it's the 100th time I've done this message, you have to know. You have to know that I love you. But now you're 15 instead of 14. I got to go to work, babe. Mwah. Like, what are you, like,
I
she's
think,
just, that's so stupid. It's stupid. She wouldn't do that.
I think you would just have to do it once a year or when like a big life change, like Worf leaves the ship. Oh, I guess I'll delete Worf from the log then. Oh, Wesley's moved on. I guess I'll delete it from. And I imagine that when you turn the hologram on, it asks you, oh, who's present? And you can just easily say these people are present, and then it meshes that together. Based on the AI that we have now, of course, 250 years from now, it's going to be able to do that.
Presumptuous thing to do.
What do you mean?
Are you presuming that everyone on the ship does this, or is it just her?
No. I'm presuming that not just because we see this one doesn't mean everybody does it, but I think based on her background and her job, she would be likely to do this.
I don't know anything about her background.
She doesn't have any family. These people are her family.
You know what? You're fine. It's fine. This is part of her character. Her character is that she wants to have a final word. I mean, come on, let's do it. Great. You have the final word. They all get to walk away knowing that you loved them.
The thing that I do like about, yeah, there is some of it that's very cliche and a little bit, you, I have learned love. You, I have learned compassion.
You, and I learned how to show my tits and not care.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bucket of feelings that happen that can be easily assigned to each person. What I do like, and that's something that I think is missing from some content today, is that we don't have everybody with black umbrellas crying, sobbing, and doing all of their memories and whatnot. Only Deanna's the only one that cries. Everyone else is very solemn. And when we end on Picard with that close-up on his face, where there isn't like the cliche single tear, and yet he's communicating a ton of emotions, and it's not this over-the-top sobbing thing. I am way more impacted by this scene than I am by people like sobbing and crying and stuff. I can feel the emotion from Picard way more than I would if he shed some tears. So I just think it was directed beautifully, if we can argue about the practicality of it.
Let me be clear. It is a beautiful scene. I'm not being sassy because I don't think that it's beautiful. I'm being sassy because I guess I, as a robot Vulcan woman, don't feel like let me just refresh my log so that everybody knows how I feel about them. I don't know. But like you said, maybe she's just like, she wants to leave something really personal for these people. And that's I understand. But
I don't know what's in there that would need to be refreshed.
I don't know. I think it's just because we know this is her death and this is like a wrap up for the show that I'm just like, okay, let's just get through this instead of it being this is a cool thing that someone did. And maybe that's because I lack some sort of thing that I'm supposed to have and I haven't worked that out yet.
Well, no, because I mean, you haven't seen a lot of Tasha episodes, or really other than like the Naked Now, I think we've watched, and the opening episode, the encounter at Farpoint. But also, like, none of us really know Tasha. Like, if this has happened in season 4 or 5, maybe there's some more impact behind these words. But we're making a lot of leaps here because we didn't get to know her character very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I do love that shot of Data at the end, just contemplating her death, just recognizing that additional connection that they had together.
I think that the chat is agreeing with you too, where it's like she had, because of who was attending, that's who was addressed. And maybe she did a whole bunch of other messages for other people and they're sent to them for like her sister or her, whoever else is out there in the world. But
that's what I would imagine.
But yeah, what I did like also about that scene is, if you were just to watch this show, if this was one of the first episodes that you watched, it does a great thing where it gives a quick elevator speech on what the characters represent. I thought it was really cool how, like with Picard, she's like, I didn't have a dad, but you know, you're the guy.
Yeah, you're the man, whatever that means. Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoy that. The predictions before we move on to the scenes. Predictions that we had. Danae, your overall prediction was that there will be a morphing monster taking on someone's skin, and there will be lesions. So you get half a point for that.
I didn't say there was going to be lesions. I said, yeah, I did say that.
Yep, and there was a kind of lesion on her face.
There was.
Half a point for that. Your oddly specific prediction was that somebody kisses somebody by accident because they're in the wrong skin. Didn't happen, but who knows?
Yeah.
It was on the cards.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I kissed the wrong person. Mm-hmm, I mean, yeah. I think something similar does happen in a later episode.
I really was thinking this was going to be more of like a person assuming the skin, but this was really cool because it's like this is the skin of these creatures that has sloughed off. Yeah. I hate that word, slough, but it's sloughed. It's come off and it's become this goopy soup that's powerful enough. Mm-hmm. There's enough power in it left over in skin cells that it can do some pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah. For sure. What else did we have? Armus does return in a lower decks episode, the spy Humongous. But it's kind of like a end of the episode tag on thing. Like they're doing some prank calls and Armus is one of the people that they prank call. And it was just an excuse to have an animated Armus come on screen and say, "I will kill you with every flake of my being."
Every flake?
Yeah, it's just like a throwaway line. We don't properly get an episode with Armus again. Who knows? Maybe one day.
I hope not.
I hope so. I want to go back in time. I want to do an episode where they're debating how to do this and Armus is the result at the end of the episode.
That'd be amazing. Know. What is there to get from Armus anymore? If this character is just pure evil that just likes to mess with people for fun.
I wanted to kill people.
Why go back?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think it served its purpose, to be honest. I just love recurring characters. I love recurring themes and bad guys, and I want more.
I would want to go back for one reason and one reason only.
Yeah.
Borg. Assimilate Armus.
Oh, shit.
That would be interesting.
That would be the end. I mean, the Borg should be the end of the Federation anyway. Yeah. They're very similar. Yeah.
The desire to mess with, though, like the playing with your food aspect, they don't do that.
No. They're all about efficiency and perfection.
So this would be adding a level of playing with their food.
Just what the Borg need, playing with their food. That's the one thing they need, of course.
I feel like Armus would become the goop that runs through their machinery. Like, that is what keeps it lubricated.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's what's been holding the Borg back all of this time. Proper lubrication, that's what it's been. That's amazing. One final, I guess you could call it a sin removal. I love that at the beginning of the episode, they're talking about the Enterprise running on impulse because it doesn't have... They're doing some, like, fancy stuff on the warp core and they have to turn the engines off. The dilithium crystals. And I love that the Enterprise's nacelle lights are off at the start of the episode.
Oh, I missed that.
I always thought it was a blooper, but it's deliberate because they're traveling at impulse and it's not working. Love that. And it also leads to a great cold open of, we've got to turn the ship engines back on and skip all of the things.
Can we start to the sins now?
Which we need to get into the sins.
That's definitely wonderful.
Yeah. Let's go to engineering. No, we're not going to engineering because they're not doing any of the correct safety procedures. Whoop, 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 whoop. Red alert, everyone. Battle stations.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains and remind ourselves there are no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, let's go first and just sin Leland T. Lynch, who is just skipping all of the safety protocols.
Right.
Right.
And also, there being no ramifications for that.
Nothing. It was fine. Like, it wasn't like we jacked up the engine. We're just going to mix the antimatter and matter without any of the safety checks. And just what's baffling here to me, and I've just completely taken over, sorry, is that we have two lives on the planet. Yes, they are important. We should not do math equations with life, except we should, because there are 1,000 lives on the Enterprise. You are risking 1,000 lives and a antimatter explosion on a maybe. You don't even know that they're still alive. Like, it's such an unnecessary risk with no consequences.
No consequence. That surprised me. I thought maybe that would play into the episode somehow.
No, none at all. Yeah, we stalled the Enterprise. Sorry, it can't go anywhere. Like, this is why the Enterprise can't leave orbit or something, because we fucked up the engine.
So what they
skip
do,
all the safety stuff.
It's this false sense of, you know, what is the word? Like, this false sense of urgency, I guess, is the best way to describe
it.
Because not only do they do that, but it's, I need 20 minutes. A minute passes. Picard's like, where are we with this? And he says,
2 minutes, Captain.
Couple minutes out. So time doesn't really mean anything. And systems checks also don't mean anything. So it's this perfect example in a 5-minute period of the show where we're designed to instantly believe what we're told on these shows to give us this feeling of anxiety that they immediately undermine. And then it doesn't matter. And we just like launch it out of our brains
Yeah. I think somebody just wanted to show us dilithium crystals. I think that's what it was.
It was a really cool crystal, yeah.
It's really, really cool. But for me, there's another way to do that that works even better. Just put the ship further away. Just like, we're getting there at maximum warp, but it's going to take us this amount of time to get, it's going to take us 5 minutes to get to you. Let's push the engines to the max and get there even quicker, burn out the engines. And then you have like everyone on the ship is powerless because they've done everything that they can. So you just have Picard and Riker pacing around the bridge, waiting to get there because they're pushing the engines to the max. Like, that works as a ticking clock as well. We didn't need to like just throw all of the safety protocols out of the window.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Crazy, crazy, craziness. Would you like to do one? I don't know if I think that was both of us.
Oh, I mean, I'm fine. You can definitely go.
Just explode. We've got a shuttlecraft crashes cliche. Like, as soon as you open the episode with Deanna is on a shuttle and we're going to rendezvous. No, you're not. That shuttle is dead. Like, that is going to crash. The track record of shuttles in Starfleet is not good.
I would have a really, really fun scene, I think, on this one, which is there's this mm-hmm. beautiful shot of the bridge. It's just after they find out that the shuttle has crashed. And I believe it's right before commercial break. And it's mm-hmm. an overhead yep. shot of the bridge. And I think what I would do is the scene would be not using everyone's bunched together for, because it's an overhead shot of the yep. entire set. Mm-hmm. Rather than the front on shot where they all have to be in the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But when it goes to the overhead shot, there's all this empty space on the left and the right because there's no one needs to be there because it's not going to be on camera. Mm-hmm. But I would absolutely sin showing us that space and then underutilizing it because.
Yes, just like there's no one there.
You could fit couches in the empty space there. You could do something.
Something efficiency.
Needs to be here.
Stick a chair in there.
A
I mean,
station,
in Generations.
A person.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do in Generations. They just stick a couple of extra consoles on the bridge because it was like widescreen. Mm-hmm. So you can see everything properly. So, wow, this looks bare. We need to stick some stuff in there.
Give them a little iPad. Have them. They invented them. Just give them a little
yeah,
walker
they
pad thing.
The iPads.
So women can scan the wall. Watch TOS.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of extras walking around.
Thing always
in TOS.
So busy.
There's just every scene is just filled with a color walking by.
Yep, and legs.
Here just it's just legs everyone everywhere. Bunched together, and maybe it's just we all need to remember like. Arms wide, this is how much space should be between you and the person beside
yes.
you.
Uh-huh.
Everyone could do cartwheels with how much extra space there was from that overhead shot, and it just tickled me.
It's living in luxury.
This is what we do. We send things mm-hmm. that don't matter, okay? That's
we
it.
We would like draw a lot of stick figures in uniforms in there. Like, look how many people you could have over here. Now, no one's going to believe me, but I wrote this down, and a couple of people in the live chat have mentioned this scene already, but it's always really jarring to me that Tasha's memorial takes place against the backdrop to Windows XP. Like, it is identical. Like, everyone must have had this thought. The bright blue background, the green field, and because the first time I would have watched this episode was around the time of Windows XP, I'm like, huh, that's weird. So it's just, like, that must be a background that somebody has where they've just plonked a Tasha Yar on the Windows XP background. It's so weird to me, but there's no way they could have predicted that. It's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I was there.
I love it so much.
Uninhabited planet is actually inhabited cliche.
Yeah, of course, didn't detect that. My other thing there is that I misremember this episode because I thought Armus had pulled them down to the planet. Nope. They are having a disaster. Do you know how big space is and how hard
it's
it is
big.
To bump into a planet? Not only did they bump into a planet, they bumped into a planet that Armus could get to. Like, unless Armus can travel really, really fast, like, he is there very, very quickly. So it's just all of the cliche bad luck that they found a planet and they crashed near Armus.
And speaking of the crash, there's a whole bunch of problems with this shuttle that is never discussed. And as someone who would like to understand the safety and quality level mm-hmm. of the ships in my shows, I would like to understand why there was such an onboard system failure of this shuttle, because it is never discussed.
I think it was like a nebula or something.
Oh,
like, I think they hit a distortion.
It
I can't
was
remember.
So bad. Listen, I know you already mentioned the shuttle thing, but we would add that detail in there because there's a lot going on. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we needed the shuttle to explode and do stuff, and it's just conveniently going to do that because it's a shuttle. That's what happens. I already seen Lieutenant Commander Lynch being just lynchy about his name, just enjoying saying Lynch. We have transporters and technology not working cliche, because it would be too easy to beam everybody up, so we have to find a way to make sure the transporters can't work.
They scanned the planet. They said there's no signs of life, no vegetation, and it meets our minimum requirements for atmosphere, and then they beam down without respirators, and I just want to say fine. You're dumb. They're like, you know what? It meets our minimum requirements. Yeah. We're going to suffer a bit down here, and not just because we're getting into goop that is going to eat our clothing, but because we can barely breathe. You know, at least we can breathe. And I thought that was a little bit upsetting.
It should have been like scorching hot, freezing cold, one of the extremes like on our planet. But it was just kind of like everyone was chilling out. It was fine. We have Picard quotes a poet cliche towards the end. He just quotes something from literature. As part of an argument, that's what Picard does.
Picard asks Riker, what's going on down there? And Riker says, trouble. Listen, sir.
I love it.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong, but that's not the answer he wanted.
We have encountered a goop monster that is rising up out of the oil. Perhaps trouble. That is something that you should say.
Considering the shuttle crashed, I'm guessing trouble was a given.
Trouble could mean anything. Could mean you have bad gas because you had a horrible taco.
It could mean tribbles.
It could be tribbles.
Could just be a bunch of tribbles. That's amazing. What did I have next? This was so silly and nitpicky. When Riker gets ejected from the goop and Picard radios up to Worf and says, beam up the away team. He doesn't specify who. So Worf should have beamed up everybody, but Picard... like, he just says, beam up the away team, not including me. He should have specified I'm staying behind. So it's weird when the Worf read the script and he knows that Picard meant just the four of them and not the whole away team. Super nitpicky. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Do you want to do some from the live chat? That's pretty much all of my sins.
Yeah, you can go for it. I'm gonna go through some of mine as you do that.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Well, I this isn't really necessarily a sin, but the music in this one cracked me up a couple times because, well, first of all, it starts off with this music between Worf and Tasha that seemed to indicate that they were flirting with each other at the beginning.
It's kind of interesting,
that
isn't
was
it?
Weird.
And like the sideways glances.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was like on the cards.
And it was like a little tinkle, 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 tinkle.
Yeah.
But then I thought that Tasha was banging Data.
No, just the once during the Naked Now. And because at the end of the episode, Tasha just goes up to him and says, it never happened.
What a thing to say.
Right?
It did, though. And you're going to be thinking about that for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
your
you
short-lived
are.
Short-lived life, BT-dubs.
Ouch. You got that fully functional Android USB D. USD. Self-sin. Just self-ding.
We'll be right back, everybody. I think we need to take a break after that one.
I'm so sorry. We do have a very personal sin from Flyboy. Right off, I'm going to sin the stupid onesie uniform from seasons one and
two.
From seasons one and two. And that the cast hated as much as I do. They were uncomfortable and pulled up when sitting or moving. They were dumb. They were cheap. I'm glad they changed them for season three. Yes, we will sin the uniforms. Anything else, Ambassador?
Oh, yeah. I only mentioned one of the music moments. The other one was I very clearly heard some music that reminds me of Tim Burton's Labyrinth in this one.
Oh, interesting.
It was so quirky. This has a lot of interesting musical aspects to it.
I mean, I loved
like,
the 80s synth at the beginning.
And like mysterious and dark. But then there was like this like, it was very labyrinth like. I just wrote that down. It wouldn't be a sin. It was just an observation that I forgot to mention. Go on.
Super 80s. I love it. This would be pretty good. Wandering Winder says, Tater, something's got me. Just Sin Shades of Grey, because there's a clip show at the end of season two where Riker is in a coma and it replays that something's got me over and over and over again. And that's probably why it's in my brain, because he has to relive his most painful moments and it keeps cutting back to this one. So yeah, just any chance to Sin Shades of Grey. Anything else, Ambassador?
called Data Tin Man.
I mean, just calling Data Tin Man. I wrote that down. He's not made of tin. I'm pretty sure he's made of uranium.
He was gaslighting me, and I'm not even it. I'm not even there.
Not even in the episode.
He's probably feeding off of my hatred.
You would trick. You would absolutely. You'd be sucked into that. You would absolutely, you'd fall for it. You'd just start shitting on Data and Worf, and you'd be like, oh, let me at him.
Did you think for a split second that he was, that Picard was going to teleport him or transport him when you watched this the first time?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. No, it was all stalling. Yeah, I didn't think there was a chance he was getting off the planet.
Can we talk about the end tantrum of this monster?
The screaming? Just like, let's just, no.
just to clarify, the plan here is for Picard to piss this thing off so bad that it throws a tantrum so that they can escape.
Yes.
And it works.
Essentially.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
This works.
It does. It works.
Yeah. Patronizing Brit just bullies him.
I literally said, my next note says, then they bury Tasha in front of a green screen.
They don't bury her. They probably just eject her into space. It's on a holodeck.
Hello, my friends. You are here now watching this image because I have died.
Brutal opening, isn't it?
Hello.
To that.
I'm Hello. Dead now.
I'm dead. I bet you're sad. I hope you're sad.
It probably happened while I was on duty. I mean, imagine if it hadn't.
Oh, no.
Imagine if she did, like, if she had literally just, like, I don't know, something just stupid and trivial. It probably happened while on duty and quickly, which is what I expected. What a weird thing.
It's very, very interesting opening, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I feel like somebody didn't want to write that.
Yeah, no, they didn't. Something I wasn't supposed to delete because it's my quote later. I think that's pretty much it for me. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect episode. Oh, I forgot to give it my pips. I give this one I actually give it a 3, which is going to be controversial. Not a lot of people. I know you've given it a 2, 2.5. I'm giving it a 3 because I really like the themes that it's delving into and how it explores them. And yes, it sucks that Tasha dies, but it's an interesting episode. I really enjoy rewatching this one and just dealing with something that is pure evil. I kind of like that. Okay, next week, Ambassador. You ready for next week's episode?
Are we still going to be doing some monster mashing?
We are still doing monster mashing. This might be the last one that we do in TNG, though, because TNG didn't deal with a lot of monsters, like lots of aliens, lots of philosophical stuff. But I had to stretch a little bit to get this episode to meet the criteria, and it's mainly because I want to do this episode.
Oh, next I week, see. Everyone. Oh, you're using your power. You're abusing your powers of captain.
No one's going to argue and no one's going to be disappointed. We're going to do Darmok next week. Yes. Demba, his arms wide. We are going to be... What? Why? Why do you look like that?
At Tanagra.
Okay. Shaka when the wolves fell.
Okay.
Do you not want to do Darmok?
Who wants to do Darmok?
Everybody.
It's like the worst episode of Star Trek ever.
Wants to do... You'll get off this show right now. I will be doing the episode solo next week.
I was embracing my evil skin.
Yeah. No, I'm really, really excited to do Darmok with you. Yes, the monster isn't really what the episode is about, but it does have a monster in it.
But it doesn't count. It doesn't count.
There is a monster in this episode. It probably counts more than this one. This isn't actually a monster.
This is a monster. That fucking thing is a monster.
It's an intelligent being. It just looks gross. That's why you call it a monster.
You would say the same thing about any of the monsters that we've seen so far.
Yes. This one isn't intelligent, though, in Darmok. We have some nerds in our chat. We really do. I love it. Well, whether you like it or not, Danae, next week we're doing Darmok and you're going to enjoy it, okay?
It had better be exciting and adventurous, because if I have to sit through an episode where we're having long, deep, like, philosophical conversations, I'm going to be so bored. I want to see some monster shit.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the final ever episode of Captain's Pod. Get in touch with the show at CinemaSinsCS on X/Twitter. Captain's Pod at CinemaSins.com. Join us on Discord, discord.gg/CinemaSins. You guys are amazing. I'm Captain Ian, and excuse me, I've got to go find out what the T in Leland T. Lynch stands for.
Oh my God, wait, what? That's not a quote from the show?
No, it's my show. I'll do what I want.
Oh my God, you're changing everything.
I've changed everything.
Okay, so you'll understand when I say that death is the state in which one exists only in the memories of others.
Exactly. And on that somber note, live long and prosper forever.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Come on! We want to do Darmok. Everybody wants to do Darmok.
Nobody wants to do Darmok. No one has asked for Darmok.
Everyone has. Darmok has been asked for so many times. And yes, it's a stretch. TNG has very few monster episodes. I'm going to have to go into Voyager or Deep Space Nine next, I think.
Well, but why do we have to stay in TNG for monsters? That's not the rules. It's any Star...
We don't.
It's
I just wanted to do Darmok. There's a monster in it.
But listen, there's a thing. When everyone quotes Darmok all the time, it just makes me not want to watch it.
You're such a dick.
Because then I still... Right?
You're a skin of evil. You are everything that is wrong with society shed from us, and we are leaving you on this planet.
Part of it is that it's kind of fun not knowing. It's kind of fun being the one that can... I can get it wrong. I can be like, yeah, it's Darmok when the shades are drawn.
Not anymore.
Whatever.
That's great. Her eyes closed.
Darmok, when the toilet needs to be cleaned. Like, I don't know. I get to be dumb about it, but now I have to watch it, and then I'm technically in on it.
Yes.
And right now I'm in this like little, you know, in-between space where...
Educate yourself. So we're just going to do the obscure episodes that no one's ever heard of. That's going to be the... My eye is literally twitching because of this. It's amazing.
Because what? You want to watch like the most popular episodes? That's not what we're doing.
I want to watch my favorite episodes.
It's not what we're doing.
No, I want to watch my favorite episodes.
No. This is about me.
Introducing you to my Star Trek.
This is me.
No, this is about me. This is my favorite episode. You'll suck it up and deal with them.
Oh, God. Oh, man. I am so excited about next week's episode, everybody. Woo!
I can't wait for you to love it despite yourself.
Well, it's going to be interesting, right? Because I don't want to watch this episode. I don't exactly understand why, except for that I'm a rebellious, horrible person, which I discover
agreed, a lot about myself
when doing any podcast, because I'm way too honest about the things that I'm feeling. Like, and I think about it later on and I'm like, should I have been that honest? You know, yes. Why? Because this is a big experiment of my human experience. Like, I watch people and I listen to people who are willing to say honest things, and I don't know why I don't want to watch this episode. I think because the references that I see all the time, it's just I get to shrug my shoulders and be like, cool, that's a thing. I don't have to watch it and understand where it came from to just be kind of part of it or whatever. Now
why are we doing this
I'm
show?
Being sucked into it. I'm being sucked into this one. You've
Star
picked
Trek?
The one episode I didn't want to watch.
You never told me this.
Why would I tell you that?
Why would you not think I'm eventually going to want to watch Darmok, one of my favorite episodes?
Is it really?
Yes.
What if I hate it, Ian?
I don't care.
Oh
I will still love it.
I really can't. I can't hate it just
because
I don't want
to
watch it.
I don't like the things
I want to watch it and actually enjoy it. I want to have an actual real reaction. But right now I'm struggling and I don't exactly understand why.
Captain's pod, when Danae snapped.
I'm not snapping. I am processing intently. There's a difference, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, okay. All right. Check, check, check. Oh, no. Where's that fucking note? Right? It's on this page. I kept it here. Search for input. Input. Sound input properties. 44. Supposed to be at 69 beaches. Supposed to be at 69 beaches. Fuck. I don't think I opened up that program. God damn it. Okay, well, that's adjusted, but this is going to be very loud. Okay. Focus. You're late for a very important date.
Your mic sounds great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I just bumped it up to its supposed to be level of 69.
Jack it up, jack it in. Let me begin. I came to win, but on me, it's a sin. Better back up.
Well, you're good at that. Rapping thing.
So get up your seat and jump around.
Jump around.
Jump around.
Jump around.
Jump up, and get down now.
Okay, so I see Tasha Yar on the screen.
Sugar.
Does that mean that this is going to be about Tasha Yar today?
is this the episode
where she dies?
This is a Tasha episode.
Skin of Evil. Skin of Evil. Does that mean she's going to die?
Skin of Evil. We have an immediate correction. So JA said, I'm disappointed in you, Captain. A couple of weeks ago, I was only able to drop in to leave a thought on Gorn evolution between Strange New Worlds and TOS. And this was that some genetic modifications happened, which dramatically changed the way that they look. And I delivered that as if it was real. And it wasn't. JA was doing a parody because that's what happened with the Klingons when they changed from their image changed so much, and that's how Star Trek explained it away. So he was making a joke about how that's also how they would explain. And I missed it, delivered it as fact, because I don't know everything. And I was like, I'm going to have to revisit Enterprise because I don't remember that happening. And I just assumed I'd forgotten. But no, it was a joke. I missed the joke.
Slab just listened to that part a few minutes ago, was really confused on your take. I think we should probably include the outtakes.
Yes.
Like, you need to have a correction, because if that's four people that were confused, we can assume that there's probably more that just listen and don't even come to the live show.
I've only watched Enterprise twice. I was willing to admit that there was an episode that I completely forgot about and just whiffed it. Like, it could be one line where they describe it in Enterprise. Like, this is the problem with jokes. I apologize, everybody. I apologize. We're doing a lot on the fly. Is it true that Gates McFadden directed Genesis? Because that's insane.
Which one's Genesis?
Is the one where they all de-evolve.
Oh, that one's fucking bonkers, and fucking I loved insane. It.
Why did Gates McFadden direct
that? Can we talk about that instead for a second? That was such a fun episode. That was so much fun.
I mean, that's a good monster episode. Should we do Genesis instead?
I don't remember why some people were devolving into frogs and some people were devolving. Like, I don't remember why.
Well, it's based on their dormant T cells. that's all it is, the dormant T cell. I wasn't joking.
No, that's right.
It's literally like they have some leftover arachnid in them. Not how it works at all, but there we go.
Because it's time to do the captain's pod again. We have been on the vacation. Vacation number... Oh, no. I meant to eat this apple. It's going to be so loud. Oh, he's not going to be happy with me if I eat this apple. Fuck! I'm hungry. What do I do? Oh, no. I can't eat the apple, but I really want to eat the apple. Okay, here. I'll eat it while I watch the content. I just won't take a bite whenever I see Ian because I'm already 10 minutes late. Hi! Oh, hello.
Hello. Hi.
Oh, me. Hi. So I haven't been on my computer for a while, and I certainly haven't opened up that program, and it was down to 47 again.
Wait, what program?
You remember how, like, my computer is docking my... Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I said I wasn't going to do this, but this apple is so juicy, and I just want to eat it so bad.
Do it. I've taken my headphones out.
No, I can't, because we're supposed to do the show. I can't. I have to watch it when we're watching our material.
Oh, so then I absolutely have to have my headphones in for it?
No, because you're going to be watching the show.
Which I do at this computer with my headphones in.
You're welcome.
Just do it.
I can't. We have to do the show. I'm 10 minutes late. We don't have time to dick around.
No, we don't have much time to dick around.
Dick around. Dick around.
Jump up and dick around. okay. The Valentine's episodes have been... humorous in their suggestions.
Oh, we're getting suggestions of...
We're getting suggestions.
Okay, that's good.
We have some serious ones, some joke ones, and then some joke ones that I'm actually tempted to do that people don't realize. That I'm like, no, I'll do it. Like, don't you tempt me. Because you said unconventional. Like, that's the crux of it. You said unconventional.
Yeah, like, fuck the normal love story. Let's do something unique. Like, Data's love for his cat. You know, that's true love.
I don't think he actually loves that cat. No, he does. He
Data doesn't love like we think. I think he appreciates the consistent camaraderie and would have an affinity or have you would be in ranking. He would rank you by safety and consistency. Has he ever defined love before?
Yes, he has.
Is that what you're up right now?
Yeah, he has defined... Okay.
I have to eat this apple. I'm so... Oh my god, it's so good. Oh, it's so yummy. Why are apples so good?
This is Data when asked about friendship, because...
Friendship and love are different, but...
This is similar, but he has a great quote about friendship. Even among humans, friendship is sometimes less an emotional response and more a sense of familiarity.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what you said.
That's what I said.
As... as I experience certain sensory input patterns, my mental pathways become accustomed to them.
Yep, familiarity.
The input is eventually anticipated and even missed when absent.
See? That's what I'm telling you. I just said that.
Exactly the same.
God damn,
and I think he's saying that to Deanna, and Deanna's reply is like, I like you too, Data.
Aww.
It's so cute. I love it.
The worst part about apples and lip gloss is,
yeah,
is that
continue.
When you go for that that bite,
mm-hmm, you slip off the apple?
Especially that first bite. Your lip, sort of like my bottom lip, curls down and touches my chin, which now means I have lip gloss on my chin.
Oh, now you get lip gloss on your chin. Yeah. Right. I was imagining that you just slipped off it. Like, it just keeps flying off your lips.
Lip gloss isn't slippery. Because you're so lubricated.
Is it not?
No.
I guess it's more sticky, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just know that it tastes horrible. Whenever I've had to interact with a partner that has had lip gloss, I'm like, I hate this. I don't want to kiss you with lip gloss on.
I'm sure they feel the same way about your beard.
I mean, fair. Yeah, I don't want to taste the last meal you had. You okay?
I think I bought a salt lamp recently and it hasn't arrived yet. And so I'm realizing that maybe I really like those salt lamps. And I got I got a little Christmas money. Maybe I'll go ahead and get that. Like, really,
and it hasn't been delivered.
I don't think I've gotten it yet.
Do you want to stop the show and check that out now?
Mm-hmm. No,
we're not going to.
No, I would never stop the show. I would never do that. Isn't she, the kid, already being indoctrinated? Not introduced, indoctrinated.
No, that's the word.
Onto
sure
Star
is.
Trek. Yes, Ian's visit this time has resulted in several things that have.
Oh no, so much.
It's really, really adorable.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't watched Star Trek. It's
no,
it's
not yet.
Talk about Star Trek, and mostly her interest is in space, ships, mm-hmm, and calling any ship the Enterprise. That's
every
kind
ship.
Of
that's
where
a
we're
nice
at.
Enterprise on your ship. I'm like, that's the Defiant, but never mind. That's fine. We'll just move on. Right, I explained what a black hole was to her and it blew her. I was like, should I be explaining this to a six-year-old? And she was like, so what happens if we fall in a black hole? And I'm just like, it won't happen, but this is what would happen. And she's just like, wait.
I go to the bathroom. Ian's over. Iris adores Ian. And they're playing. Ian bought her a Minecraft Lego set for Christmas.
Yeah.
And they have been playing with it nonstop. So anyway, they're doing their thing, which gives me a moment to myself. I come back around the corner and Ian just looks at me and he's like, okay, I have to tell you something.
Yeah.
I definitely talked to Iris about black holes. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is how I described them.
I look over and she's just rocking in the corner. Oh, God. Not really.
Having an existential crisis. When I told her there was one at the center of the galaxy, she was like, wait, what? Because it started because she was like, I mean, black holes aren't real, right? And I'm like, oh, you wait. Unicorns, not real. Black holes, real. It's one of the weird things where as adults, we're like, unicorns are ridiculous. And then you describe a black hole and you're like, you know what? Unicorns make sense. Unicorns are more likely than black holes.
Yeah, she was fine. She had moved on to whatever fun thing she was doing next. But apparently the reaction to the black hole conversation, she was really like alarmed because Ian said that he described it as, quote, we're being sucked slowly in.
Didn't say we.
Okay. Sucked in, and what goes in is dissolved and turned into stardust and shoots out the other side.
I said anything that falls into a black hole gets pulled apart, loosely turned into energy, and then fired back out as radiation. Those are the literal words I used. And she was like, so what if we fell in? And I said, that would happen to us. But luckily, we are nowhere near a black hole, so it won't happen.
But it
and
is at the center
me.
Of our galaxy. And she's
but
like,
there is a massive one that we're all spinning around. And that's what we're spinning around. She's, okay.
She's just like, oh, shit.
I'm going to go eat some crayons because that's much safer than this black hole business. I know that she kind of understood it because she was like, well, does that mean it could make electricity? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, if we could harness it, then yeah, it pumps out a ton of energy that we could use as electricity.
Yeah.
So she kind of got what I meant when I said energy. She just translated that to the energy that powers our home.
Our electricity. Yeah.
The lights.
Yeah. That's only true from the point of view of an outside observer, says David. For the person who fell in, time would stretch to infinity.
I forgot to tell you this.
Don't tell her that.
No. She did ask. I can't remember how she heard this, but she said, like, is time travel possible with a black hole? So on one of her shows, they've mentioned black holes and time dilation.
She watches a lot of science shows. That's my fault.
Uh-huh. So I was like, if you're on the edge of the black hole, then yeah, everything slows down. So if you're further away, then time will just progress normally, but the person that's next to the black hole, everything outside will speed up and you'll just like live forever. That one probably didn't sink
in. Just as a reminder, she's 6 and a half. So who knows what's going to sink in. And we will get ready to go.
Let's go.
Episode where she dies, bitch.
Yeah. Happy New Year, everybody. Enjoy your character death.
This probably shouldn't be in the podcast, but it's okay if you put it in the podcast.
Okay. That'll be the final outtake.
if you're hearing that.
Nope.
We are now in the absolute we're releasing a podcast episode that is so brave that we've decided that anything goes. And it is a whatever Danae said podcast. And honestly, I'm glad that we're finally here.
For context, I'm going to include that in the pod, but not the thing that she's referring to, which is my favorite thing to do. And maybe someday at a live show, we will tell you in person where we can deny it and it isn't recorded for all time.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.